Hi, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of No Filter Sports Podcast. I'm Bob Page, sitting in for Eli Zarin, who's off today, joined by Danny McClain and our newest cast member, Fred Heumann, the longtime Detroit and Lansing television sports anchor. And right away, fellas, I cannot do, and it so breaks my heart, I can't do my traditional Lions lament here. What happened yesterday in Arizona? Well, here's how it happened. Play it, Brandon.
This will be a 39-yard field goal attempt. And the kick by Matt Prater is good. And the Lions have taken a 26-23 lead, and the game is over. The Detroit Lions have ended an 11-game losing streak.
Our broadcasters there sound very surprised that they won, don't they? I mean, my God, it came out of the peanut box, and there it is. They won a ball game.
The Lions' best player won them a game. Their kicker, Matt Prater, he is unbelievable.
Yeah, he really is.
He's really good. And so is Stafford, by the way. I get tired of the Stafford bashing around the state because they lose and lose and lose. Hey, he's the best quarterback to wear a Lions uniform of our lifetimes, and we're not young. The guy's a pretty special player. He's not the top five, but he's a really good player. Gives him a chance to win every game or any game.
He also missed a lot of throws in this game.
Yeah, he Sunday did, but Fed. All quarterbacks missed throws.
And one thing you never get tired of is bashing Matt Patricia. So here's what he had to say after Sunday's game.
Just proud of them, happy for them. Again, I know it's a long season. We got a lot of work to do, but a lot of great plays out there, guys just really trying to do everything they could to help the team win. So all the way across the board, all phases, and really thought at the end of the game did some really good situational stuff too. So just excited for the guys, excited for the players, excited for our fans back home, and certainly excited for Sheila for her first win as owner.
Well, it's, that's typical what he says, whether they win or lose, that they're excited about the team, they want to win, they want to do this, and we're excited about this. Listen, one thing about it, I'll ask you guys a question. Is this team better than it was a year ago?
Well, they have a quarterback. When they lost, I think it's a little bit of piling on to say to throw the 11-game losing streak in their face, because they lost 9 in a row without Stafford. And without Stafford, they're just they're bottom dwellers. And he's that important to this team. And yet, this is why America loves the NFL. There's only 16 games, and every game is so meaningful. So every game counts like 5-6 times the value. And now they're going to get people off Patricia's back for a week. People are going to stop calling for his hide for 1 week. This just doesn't make him a better coach. But not you. Well, when they win, I've made my statement. I think they're better off in the future without him than with him. Okay. But they won a game. So this will get the Wolves off his back for a week, and then it'll get obliterated by New Orleans next week. And
Freddie, look at what they did though. I mean, Patricia adjusted his defense against the Cardinals, a game nobody expected him to win. He threw in more zone coverage. He mixed up the secondary and the linebackers, and he really confused Arizona's second year quarterback, Kyler Murray, drew up all sorts of little strategic bits that kept the Lions in the game from the start. The looks bothered Murray. He threw 3 interceptions. Now, Fred, you can't say this guy can't coach. He was a great defensive coordinator in New England. Now, he might not be a head coach. I'm going to buy it. I'm buying into what you say about that. And he probably will still be fired, nevertheless.
One game does not make a career. And I think that can be said of him at this point in time. Terry Bradshaw summed it up pretty good. Fire them both, the general manager and the coach, and start all over again. I mean, I don't think anybody's been more honest than that, because I don't see him going anywhere, even with our quarterback, if he's healthy. I don't see him going anywhere. I don't see anything flashy. I don't see anything that's different than last year or, by the way, the other 35 or 40 years. I mean, sooner or later, they're going to hire the right people in the front office, football people, for a change.
I don't think so. It's not as long as
organization.
I don't think so. Not as long as the Fords own the franchise. It's never happened. I don't believe it's going to happen, I know she's a lovely lady and she's smart. Sheila Ford Hamp running the team. I just don't trust them, Denny.
Well, we got a different person now running the organization. We will see how much she's influenced by Patricia and or Quinn. Let's find out who she listens to. And we won't know anything for about 7 or 8 games unless they don't win another one after the first 8. But I suggest to you, it's just like Major League Baseball. At the end of 40 games, about a third of the season, when it's at that point, you can tell pretty much what your team is going to do.
I'm not a big backseat coacher, but let's not forget what the Cardinals coach did yesterday. Cliff Kingsbury, when he takes Kyler Murray, his best player, on fourth down out of the game for some reason, and another quarterback comes in to take a snap for gosh knows what reason now, and of course they get a penalty because they're not used to the cadence. And also this DeAndre Hopkins, who's maybe the best receiver in the game, he just shreds the Lions defense and beats up the rookie Okuda pretty good. Then Okuda gets hurt, his backup comes in, and I thought Hopkins would go for 200 yards in the fourth quarter and he never saw the ball again. You know, those are two questionable decisions on the Cardinals, but I agree with you, Bob. For one game, Matt Patricia did okay. Okay, and they won a game yesterday.
Okay, but I want you to think about this now.
Yeah,
we have been saying on this show for the last month that this looks like an 0-4 team, and maybe Matt gets fired. Mm-hmm. How quickly things change! Now they're 1-2. Now the next game we knew, quote unquote, the Lions would lose is against a New Orleans team, which is suddenly 1-2 mm-hmm. in Detroit. The Lions could be 2-2 after the first four, and what do we say then?
Well, they won't. They won't beat the Saints. It doesn't matter in which stadium, but you know, that goes back to my point about how valuable the NFL and every victory is and why people are riveted to this sport. Because when you play 16 games, every game means so much. We saw that a little bit in baseball this year because of the shortened season. Yes. And we'll get to baseball later, but the games are more meaningful. When the games are more meaningful, people are riveted to it.
Okay. I want you to think about this also. Okay. While we have a great matchup Monday night, and perhaps most of you are listening to the show after the game has been played, the Chiefs are playing Baltimore. The NFL's crummy game of the year is now set for Thursday night this week, with perhaps the worst two teams in the league, 0-3 Denver versus the 0-3 Jets.
That's terrible, now,
Jets defensive lineman Steve McClendon had a message for his team after Sunday's humiliating loss against Indy. Here's what he said. We have two choices, and the two choices are you can lay down and take it, or you can stand up and fight like a man. Those are my words to my guys. So give the Detroit Lions a lot of credit. I can't believe I'm saying this, because they were faced with the same two choices, and they stood up and they fought like men. Am I wrong?
No, they played hard yesterday. They played well. They played hard. And they get a victory. You don't anticipate that on the road against a quarterback, although I think that kid has throwing issues. But the point is, they won a game on the road in the NFL, and give them their due, okay? They won a game. I don't think they're going to beat the Saints. I don't care where they play it, but they're 1-2, and it is what it is. Denny?
Let's not forget that two of the three passes that they intercepted were balls that bounced off the receiver's hands. And the other thing, too, here's the other thing that gets me upset about the Lions, and all of a sudden the defense of the media has come out again, and they're defending Stafford. Hey, he's been here a long time now without playing into some kind of a championship game, any kind of a championship game. I mean, play a pinball machine, for God's sakes. Let's call that a real game, because I just don't get it. They defend him. He's a good player. He is a good player. Like you said, Bob, he's not probably one of the top five, but he's a good player. But he needs a better ball club, number one, or number two. You know, as we saw the first 2 weeks, he had a tough time playing football the first 2 weeks. He was a little bit better this week, but I don't call him a championship quarterback just because they won.
Both you guys know every man I'm about to mention. Kurt Sylvester, the longtime Lions beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Mike O'Hara, the longtime Detroit Lions beat writer for the Detroit News. Tom Kowalski, great guy who unfortunately died too young, who handled it for the Oakland Press. Yeah. And, of course, Frank effing Beckman. And you know what that coverage was called when those guys ruled? The Lions Country Club coverage. Denny, nothing's changed. The Detroit media is a soft sports media market. Nothing's going to change. Joe Falls is dead. Jerry Green's retired. I'm gone. Al Ackerman's dead. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's when I played, it was a whole different atmosphere and environment when you, especially if you were stringing a couple of losses in a row or somebody going 0-16, something like that. They pounded on you pretty good. I don't know what's happened to that kind of objective reporting anymore. We sure don't see it in this town anymore. And that's too bad, because people are not getting something that's true, yet they're afraid to write about it.
Well, I don't know. I understand what you're saying, Bob. It was a different era then. I think there are so
but
many.
The same era now, apparently. That's what I'm saying.
Well, the newspaper writers don't necessarily get into the analysis like they did, and we don't have the columnists with the power and the gusto of some of those guys you mentioned anymore.
And I should also mention now that Drew Sharp, unfortunately, has passed away as well, because he was tough on the Lions.
That's right.
Oh, he is very tough on the Lions. But, you know, bashing the Lions is like walking your dog. It's, you know, it's just so easy to do now because things haven't changed. But, you know, I'm going to disagree with Denny on Stafford. I don't think he's great, but I think he's the only reason they're competitive in a lot of these games. I think Stafford is something special. I think he's gutsy. I think he's durable.
On a good team, he's a winner. I mean, everybody knows that.
Of course he is. I don't think you can blame. I don't think you can fault Matthew Stafford for any of the Lions' failures the last 10 years. That's what I'm saying. What do you mean?
It takes 11 guys to play the game. Excuse me.
But he's the best of the 11.
He's an intricate part of the team. But listen,
he's the best of the 11.
Freddie, I got something to tell you. When you lose, they all lose. You can't blame one guy or 10 guys or 9 guys.
He's not a reason for them losing.
Well, I suggest to you, if he's not the reason for losing, then it's the coach.
Who are you going to do? Well, okay, that's what we're back to. We're back to square one.
That's right.
I think it's the ownership. We're really back to square one. Yeah. Okay, so all right. Okay, so I want to tell you guys, first of all, about this. Since 2017, the Hope Not Handcuffs program has helped 4,600 people get the help and resources that they might not have gotten otherwise. So any of you, anybody, you know anybody struggling with a substance abuse disorder or addiction, doesn't matter whether it's heroin, painkillers, cocaine, even alcohol, can go to one of 100 participating police locations and ask for help. With no fear of being arrested, the police officer is going to treat them with compassion and call a volunteer angel who will come to the police department and assist with paperwork and making phone calls to get them placed into treatment that very day. The first step doesn't need to be the hardest. There is hope. So go to hopenothandcuffs.com to learn more and make a big step toward recovery, either for you or for someone you love. So Denny had just brought up the pregame show on Fox yesterday where Terry Bradshaw continued his assault on the FLs. ESPN was once the only pregame show I watched. Now it's a joke. I don't watch it. Ditto Fox with its Fox 2 dude stuff. It's just such a turnoff. But Sunday, yesterday, I did watch the Fox pregame show because they had the Giants 49ers game and I wanted to get the latest on it. What I also got, did you guys watch the show? Did you see this? Was a big feature on the Detroit Lions featuring Michigan native, the actor Jeff Daniels, who at 65 has no business still being an NFL's fan, but he is. Now, most of the people featured were younger guys, guys who started watching the Lions probably around the early 1990s. Their attitude was summarized by the last guy they showed who said, quote, win, lose, or tie, I'm a Lions fan till the day I die, end quote. And fellas, that's the problem. I've always said this. In any business, when you're trying to sell a product that is awful, yet you know that somehow gullible people are going to keep buying it anyway, life sure is great. So where's the incentive, boys, to really get better?
I'll tell you where the incentive was for Jeff. Jeff is promoting a movie. I mean, come on. Otherwise, Jeff doesn't even get invited on the show. So, I mean, they're calling people trying to get him booked to get it out, get his wares out there so everybody can see his movie.
What movie?
And that's what Jeff is there, whether he's a Lions fan or not.
Well, fans are fans, guys.
Yeah.
And Bob, unlike people in the media, whether they're soft or hard, fans, their whole MO was to stick by their team. So fans aren't going to go away, okay? Fans are not going to leave franchises.
I left Detroit 32 years ago, and I kicked my Detroit Lions addiction from my childhood. I watch the Giants and Jets now. And
well, you're a New Yorker.
And do leave their addiction to their local teams.
Most people are not like that. Most people are fans, and we're all behind our baseball team or our football team or our hockey team, and doggone it, there's another season and there's hope. And like Ernie Harwell used to say on opening day, nobody's lost a game yet. That's how most fans approach it.
I think
that's
you're
just
right.
The way it is.
And one of them is Brandon McAfee. Yeah. Brandon, take it away.
Why would you ditch your hometown team that sucks for two New York teams that suck?
because I moved to New York. And they sure suck. Right now, how many Super Bowls, Brandon, have the Detroit Lions ever played
it's
in?
Just
how
make...
many have the New York Giants won?
Well, I mean, it's just going to make that a little bit more better when the Detroit Lions eventually do get there, because I'm going to be able to celebrate it, and you're not going to be able to.
No, well, I'm not going to celebrate it.
I'll give you something similar. When I was growing up in Chicago, I was a huge Cubs fan. Our whole family was a huge Cubs fan. And the Cubs never won. Never won. I mean, if they won two games in a row, it was a week of celebration by everyone that we lost from then on. And the Bears weren't very good back then either. So I lived in hell with those two teams for a very, very long time. It's nice to see both of those finally, after 1,000 years, get on the right track.
Speaking of the Bears.
I'm going to talk about the Bears.
We're going to talk about that.
But Danny, I want to say this.
Yeah.
I was at a baseball exhibition game in Florida a number of years ago, talking to some people. Turns out they're from Chicago. So I said, oh, you guys are Cubs fans? The guy looks at me and says, no, we're fans of Major League Baseball, the White Sox.
Oh, that's
what it was like. So, Freddie, you want to talk about
that guy was drinking.
The point is, fans are fans are fans, and they're going to stick by their team no matter what. I was just saying, the Bears have now pulled their quarterback, their starting quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, and they're 3-0. That's almost unheard of. I'm not here to defend it or knock it, but Nick Foles, who was once at Michigan State, left Michigan State because he couldn't beat out Kirk Cousins.
Right.
He left school there, went to Arizona, had a good career, and he's won a Super Bowl. He is like the ultimate backup quarterback, and now it appears, because he came in and rescued the Bears yesterday and made them 3-0, he's going to be the new quarterback, and Trubisky, who arguably led them to the 3-0 mark. Part of that was that comeback against the Lions when he was terrible for three quarters, revived himself in the fourth quarter, got the win. Now they're 3-0 and switching quarterbacks. I can't remember a team switching quarterbacks when they're 3-0.
Listen, here's the difference. The Polish kid, all he does is throw little 4 and 5 yard little dinks, a dunk here, a dink here. The other guy throws the ball like a real professional does down the field a couple of times. Makes a big difference.
Chicago's a Polish town.
How did they win? The guy threw a 35 yard touchdown pass. Foles did. I mean, listen, they now got a quarterback. I think he's the best quarterback in the NFL, and Bears, here we come.
Wait a minute. Nick Foles is the best quarterback in the NFL? You don't mean that.
I do today.
Well, he's been really good. He really
well,
has
yeah,
his
but
face
watch
that.
The two guys really on Monday night when Philly. They play. When you talk about best quarterbacks
listen,
in the league,
that'll be the game of the century. I think if they play as well as both of these teams can play, it will be some game tomorrow night.
Hey, I want to mention a very important issue about that Bears game yesterday, and you guys know this. Falcons cornerback A.J. Terrell's positive, his positive COVID-19 test did not affect the status. They played anyway. The Saturday tests for every other Falcons player and coach came back negative Sunday morning. Terrell was the only player or coach to test positive across the entire NFL entering week 3. So you know what, Danny? You've been extremely concerned about this. The NFL's done a great job, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They've done a great job. Because based upon what we had heard all of spring and all of this summer, is that if anybody pops up positive, they're not going to play that week or not play for a week. So this kind of surprised me when we heard he tested positive and they still played.
I totally agree, because there's so many guys, obviously, on football teams and so many assistant coaches. It's pretty impressive.
I had my doubts a month ago whether any of these seasons would finish, because we were all so paranoid about this, and some of it very legitimately. Yeah. And we thought, you start playing games. I said the same thing. I said, how can you, if you can't have kids in classrooms, in schools, how can you go out in the afternoon or the weekend or Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon or after school and play football when you're spitting and gobbing and hitting each other? How can we pull this off? It'll never work. There'll be too many positive tests. Too many people to get sick. Good for trying, but everything's going to shut down. We thought baseball was hanging on a thread there for about 3 weeks.
Yeah,
we thought they were going to cancel the season, okay? But this is part of my argument why going out and trying this stuff, because you can't shut down the world because of this COVID thing, and you're going to live at some risk, and some people are going to test positive. Doesn't mean they're going to get sick and die, but they're going to test positive, and you have to move forward. And yeah, Denny, you're right. Good for the NFL to have only one positive test, and for baseball to finish this season, and college football, now they're all in because the Mid-American Conference is joined the Big Ten and the Pac-10 and getting back to playing. And so I think people have decided that this doesn't stop sports, okay?
I don't know if you saw this, Freddie, but and I'm sure Denny's going to want to comment on this. In my state of legal residence, Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis the other day said enough is enough. There's not one scintilla of evidence that has shown that anybody in a bar or restaurant has ever come down with COVID-19 and died.
Oh, Bob, you know what?
Denny, listen to me. I'm not done. He opened every restaurant and bar in the state of Florida to full capacity, no mask. As of last Friday night. Now you can comment.
You'll have another surge. It takes about a week or 10 days for it to set in. Yeah. So we'll see.
But that's what Florida did.
I did see that.
The two leaders in the state of the United States are still one of the leaders. I mean, I don't know how he could do that. I just don't. But that's not here nor there. I mean, one thing I know is our football coach is not Mr. Belichick. And end of the prayer.
as Fred just mentioned, the Detroit Tigers season has mercifully come to an end. Did you guys know this? Thank God. You did. That the Tigers' final record, 23-35, is exactly the same as it was last year through 60 games when they wound up losing 114. So the Free Press headline on Monday morning says, Detroit Tigers now at crossroads after some bright spots in 2020. Rebuild is almost over. Is it? In just 60 games, can we base these opinions on what we've seen?
Can somebody tell me, one of you guys tell me the bright spot?
Well, come on, Willie Castro's being touted as American League Rookie of the Year.
Well, and I think Skubal has been a bright spot. I think Skubal has shown that he can pitch and he can pitch.
I think so.
How about
and the bullpen?
I think there are a few bright spots, but I don't think that necessarily means that they have turned the corner.
That's my point.
They're not even close.
I mean, they were 17-16. Do you realize this? They were 17-16. So that means they finished 6-19 their last 25 games. Okay. As I suggested back when they were 17-16, I don't recall if it was on this vehicle or not, but I said if this were a regular season and they played 162 games, which is the kind of the charm of baseball. The cream rises to the top and the gunk falls to the bottom. If this was a full season, the Tigers would be right at the bottom again. Well, it didn't even take a full season. It took 60 games and they finished with the third worst record in all of baseball, the second worst record in the American League. And if they'd have played 60 more games, that would have probably continued. So I'm encouraged by some of the young people they have there.
Who?
Okay.
Who are you encouraged by?
Skubal, Candelario, who proved me wrong. And Castro, okay.
And Harold Castro can play first base. He hit 300.
Castro.
Denny, think about this. The starting pitching, as we know, was awful. The bullpen was generally awful. But how about Brian Garcia? He had a great year. What a surprise. And even Jose Cisneros was, I thought, pretty solid coming out of the bullpen. But I will say this. Eli had broached the touchy subject of Michael Fulmer here on our last show. And I compared him to Joel Zumaya, the former talented Tigers right-hander whose career flamed out too soon due to elbow problems. So did you see this? Fulmer now says that he is happy with the way this aborted season went. Knew he had no chance to win a single game because the Tigers said they wouldn't let him pitch more than three innings. So Fulmer ends up with two losses and an ERA of 8.78 and says his only goal was to take his regular turn every time out, which he did that. I mean, that's success.
It's a major league pitcher pitching three innings and quick get in the shower before you catch a cold. Listen, also, you know, we also lost Mr. Zimmerman yesterday as he finished the season with a his entire stay here, he finished with an ERA of 5.65. This year he's got a 9.64. I assume that he will be gone because he took $110 million, which he had earned, by the way. But I can't get over it that we did not.
You saying Jordan Zimmerman earned his $110 million?
Well, he signed a contract.
Yeah, he did that, Danny. You're right.
And he did that very, very well. My suggestion now to the organization is very simple. You take Mize, you take Skubal, and you take one or two of the other kids that were in AA, AAA, let them go pitch winter ball, and let them pitch, let them pitch to five innings or four innings, whatever you want to do, but let them get in a routine, and let's see what they can do. Because right now, Mize is the last guy on the staff you want to see go into a ball game. He just doesn't demonstrate the ability to pitch at these levels. And I would only hope that with all the hoopla and the money, is, at this point in time, the money's not really important, I would think, to him and his family. Bottom line is he's got to learn how to pitch. Somebody's got to go with these guys and teach them the philosophy of pitching, because right now they all look like they're reading the same book and there's nothing written in the book.
Well, here's part of the reason the Tigers don't open the vault, because they know down deep, for all that they say, they're not close enough. And even signing a guy that seems logical, Jonathan Scope at second base, to bring him back, the kind of money he's going to command.
Yeah.
And let's say you play a full season next year. What difference is a free agent like Jonathan Scope going to make? Are you going to lose 90 games instead of 100 games? And yep. You have to decide. These are tough decisions Alavia and the Tiger brass have to make right now.
Okay,
you have to sign a home run hitter, or you have to sign a guy that's not going to make that big a difference for a lot of money.
I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about the latest Sermon on the Mount. But I do have to tell you, as J.P. McCarthy used to say every morning on WJR, we got to pay the rent. So, folks, I want you to think about this, because it's critical. Are you 100% satisfied with your financial plan? If not, we recommend you get in touch with Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. He served many Detroit area businesses and families by creating great financial plans and trust forms. So whether it's planning for future family obligations or your own retirement, let Luke's track record of success and decades of experience create a custom solution for you or your business. You call Luke, here's the number, 248-663-4748. He's going to set up a complimentary consultation for you. And then if you feel comfortable, let him do his thing. He's going to lay out a plan that fits your individual needs. You do not want to be worried about money in your retirement. Luke is totally ethical, knowledgeable. He's caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Call him again, 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And if you haven't refinanced your mortgage in the past few years, you know that there isn't a better time than right now to call David Hall Mortgage. David's been serving the Metro Detroit community for over 30 years. He's maintained a leadership position in the Metro Detroit mortgage market by consistently offering better options, more personal attention, and in the process, he's built a resume of thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial provides the fastest service in the business, generally 3 or fewer weeks. And that's enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. So go to DavidHallMortgage.com to get started, or just call. I know you can remember this number, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So anyway, boys, Mighty Miggy has finally come down off the mound. He didn't talk to reporters all season. In a recorded session with submitted questions, talked about his future with the Tigers, says he has 3 more years on his contract, and I'm going to play him. Then he says he wants to be in the field. He wants to play defense again.
Oh, God.
Can you believe this? So what can the Tigers do about this? He's a first baseman. That's the only place he could play. So they take Eric Torkelson and move him to third, as the Tigers announced they do anyway. Now, boys, what about Candelario? Great year, a lot of trade value. I said that Harold Castro looked really good. He can play first too. Do they trade Candelario for a frontline star pitcher if Miggy plays first?
I'll tell you what I do. I trade as many higher profile players with some ability as I can before they break into stardom, if in fact any of them ever do. We got 2 or 3 kids that look pretty good. I would start to try to make a deal with them. And if a pitcher has to go with them, that's a bad thing to say if a pitcher has to go with them. But as far as their fielding position players, they've got 2 or 3 that can play. Let them play. Let's showcase those guys, if nothing else, during winter ball, and let's make some deals that we can build a team around. You got to have a nucleus. You got to have a couple guys that can actually play the game. We used to have those guys here. We don't have them anymore.
One of the things I miss about the Dave Dombrowski era.
Yeah.
And not that he
about
made
two
every
World
call
Series appearances. Right. That's one of the things I miss.
Thank you. Right. Thank you.
Amen.
But he rolled the dice. He had the guts to pull the trigger, and some things didn't work out. Do you think that that Boyd would still be here if Dombrowski were the president? No way.
No.
He would have traded him when he had the most value a year ago. And Michael Fulmer, they could have had Javi Baez for Michael Fulmer before all this. They held on to these guys too long. So while it sounds ludicrous to trade a guy like Candelario after the kind of season he had, let's not forget it was a two-month season. And when you look at the whole of Candelario, other than the last 2 months, it hasn't been that good. So I'm not adverse to trading a young player to try to truly build this to where you're not satisfied with 5.9 ERAs and records that are third worst in baseball. And this is part of what I miss about the Dombrowski era, as he had the guts to pull the trigger on hunches. And I think the Tigers have become too conservative and too predictable.
They need
excellent points. Denny, go ahead.
Yeah, they need to refocus on going after pitching. They're not really going after pitching. They're going after position players.
Denny, look at the draft. That's not true. Look at their number one draft choices.
Let me finish. They're going after position players. Position players are fine. But I don't care how many good position players you get. If you haven't got any pitching, you just got a bunch of new position players. You got to build your team around either two or three good hitters, or you got to build it around some pitching. Go get the pitching before you do anything else. Why do the St. Louis Cardinals every year come up with a couple of guys? Why? Every year.
How about the Indians?
Because they concentrate on pitching. They go after these young kids.
Okay, here's the next big.
Or moving back, they draft better players.
But I don't agree with that because I don't agree with that because we've gotten Casey Mize, Matt Manning, Alex Fado, Tariq Skubal. They're making an effort to make, you know.
Yeah, that was the point that I tried to make with Denny. Now, okay, all three of you guys, and I want your opinion on this too, Brandon. Here's the next major issue. Ron Renneke is not going to return as manager of the Red Sox after their disappointing season. The speculation's already swirling about a potential return for Alex Cora, who, as you know, was fired, suspended for the 2020 season for his role with the Astros in their sign-stealing scandal. So Cora could be back with Boston. Somebody going to hire him, and somebody sure going to hire A.J. Hinch, but Detroit had better move quickly to replace Gardy if that's what they want to do, unless they want to keep a great baseball man in Lloyd McClendon. What should they do?
Well, I think it's a no-brainer. If he's interested, I'd hire A.J. Hinch tomorrow, okay? He came out. Granted, he cheated. But as he said, he oversaw the cheating. He was upfront about it. He said, I should have put a stop to it. He didn't originate it, okay? He didn't invent it. He let it exist, okay? He's come forward. He admitted he did wrong. And before that happened, he was considered one of the best young managers in baseball. He had a successful run there, and he has Tiger ties because he played at Detroit. I've seen the lists. I've seen the lists of all the candidates, okay? And A.J. Hinch would be my hire tomorrow if he's interested.
Agreed. Danny?
Let me say this to you. I think that's all fine and dandy. This organization historically does not have a history of giving guys a second or third chance. This organization is not going to do that. So those are two guys that are eliminated right off the top. I don't know who's going to be the next manager. You guys know who I want, but
Lance Parrish.
Yeah, Lance Parrish. So, but I don't think he'll be hired either. I thought at one time he was a lock because what I saw over in Grand Rapids. But as much as he knows about the game, for some reason, something happened within the organization that I don't think he can get the job.
I don't know either. Okay, now you mentioned the St. Louis Cardinals pitching, how they find these kids. And I mentioned Cleveland. Do you boys know who Matt Blake is? Anybody?
Not offhand.
Matt Blake is the pitching coach of the New York Yankees. He never played professional baseball. Highest level he ever reached was College of the Holy Cross. Earned run average in 4 years there, 6.54. His first foray into learning about the intricacies of pitching and the body's movement came from online forums, books, and DVDs. Then he became, get this, a self-taught pitching instructor just over a decade ago. He was a salesman for a marketing company 5 years ago, coaching high school baseball. Now he's a Yankees pitching coach. Guys like Gerrit Cole swear by him. And ironically, the Yankees now meet the Cleveland Indians in the playoffs, and that was Matt Blake's team. He developed those kids in Cleveland. Danny, you've been very hard on Rick Anderson this year. What should the Tigers do about a pitching coach?
I'll tell you one thing. He certainly has sold himself as a marketing guy, hasn't he, to be the Yankees pitching coach now.
Never that's for sure.
The game in the major leagues. That's the one in a million shot, I guess, was what you'd call it. You know, listen, I still stand where I am. You got to go out and find a guy who's had a lot of success, somebody that the players can believe in, can say, oh, boy, he won that, he did that, he did this. That's what they got. They got to have something impressive. Because, listen, the Latino players, they don't get impressed very easily. They got a lot of good players, a lot of good pitchers down there, and they're not going to be swayed just because somebody says, well, you know, he won the Cy Young in 1902. They're not going to take that. They're going to want somebody who knows more about pitching than they do.
Yeah, and in terms of the manager's role, I don't know how this relates to the pitching, but what I said, I'd hire A.J. Hinch tomorrow. Yeah. That would be only if Joey Cora isn't interested or available, or maybe he's got something cooking with the Red Alex Sox Cora. To return there.
Yeah.
Alex Cora, did I say Joey Cora? Alex Cora, the former manager of the Red Sox, who also got caught in the cheating scandal in his role, as Bob mentioned, in the dugout with the Astros. But I think because of the Hispanic factor and the fact that Cora was a rising star in the profession, got the gig with the Red Sox, fell in the right place at the right time, may have been runner-up when they hired Brett Ausmus. I know he was in the mix, and I know he was interviewed by Dave Dombrowski. I think Joey Cora would be a great fit here, too.
Alex,
well, one of those guys will, if not both of them, will work very cheap for a bad ball club, and I think that's where you're going to look. I don't think the big league, the big winning clubs are going to hire either one of those guys just because of what happened. And that's not the greatest excuse in the world, but that's just the way baseball's always been. But you know what? If they can at least get their foot in the door, you know, it's some club that's not doing so well, and there's a bunch of them not doing so well, they'll get in with somebody, and they'll excel. I really believe that.
The Yankees are favored to beat the Indians. Heck with that. They're favored to beat everybody in the American League in the playoffs. Dodgers overwhelming favorites in the senior circuit. MLB playoffs start on Tuesday night. We're not going to run down the matchups for you. There are too many of them, and we don't want to bore you. Four rounds. Here's the format, in case you don't know. Instead of a round featuring one sudden death wild card game with the division winners resting, format now is the wild card series is a best of three. All games at the higher seeds home ballpark. Division series is best of five, 2-2-1. League championship series, best of seven, 2-3-2. World series, best of seven, 2-3-2. And what they're going to do about home field advantage, it goes to the higher seed in the playoffs. Okay. So the National League Division Series is going to be played in Arlington and then Houston and the Petco Park in San Diego and Dodger Stadium will host the NL playoffs and the World Series. And isn't this a wonderful thing? The World Series is going to be played again on a neutral site in Arlington, Texas. No snow, no miserable night temps with pictures of Bowie Kuhn running through your mind in shirt sleeves and 37 degree temperatures at Pittsburgh. Hooray, boys. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, let me ask you about the home field, Denny. When there are no fans, is there any home field advantage? Is there comfort to staying in your own place, or is the home field advantage a wash right now with no fans?
It's always nice to play in your own park. You know, you're home, you're with your wife, you're with your children, you're at your own restaurants and what have you when you're able to. But I don't, unless you got your fans there with you, there's no edge. I don't think there is. No big time edge anyway. And you just, you know, you get used to playing in a certain dimension of a ballpark. And some guys can actually play in those types of environments. Mm-hmm. So that's about the only advantage I see. I just don't see anything really big time.
Among you three boys, do I see any contrarians here? Or is it going to be the Yankees versus the Dodgers in the World Series?
I understand. Well, I don't, the Yankees limped into the postseason, Bob. They lost eight of their last 10. I'm not even considering the Yankees necessarily going to beat Cleveland.
Fred, I mean, I'll tell you why I think so. I'll tell you why. Because they got the big guys back in the lineup, and they make everybody else a better hitter.
Yeah, but
and
the biggest
guy
in that
those two guys in that lineup, look out, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, but the biggest guy in that series is not Garrett Cole. It's Shane Bieber, the pitcher for the Cleveland Indians, who's going to win the Cy Young in the shortened season.
But
so if he shuts them down in game one, the Indians are going
to
win that
series. I want to say to Denny, they got three big guys in the lineup. DJ LeMahieu out of Birmingham, Brother Rice, finished after Sunday's games.
Well, that's what I said.
364 batting average. He has become, this is amazing, the first player in Major League Baseball history to lead both leagues in hitting. Now, Luke Voit of the Yankees, you don't even talk about him when you talk about Aaron Judge and those guys.
Right.
His 22 homers topped the majors.
Yep.
They are the first pair of teammates to lead the majors in batting average and homers since, ready for this? Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews, 1959, Milwaukee Braves.
Yeah, but if good, just to echo what Denny said about the importance of the Tigers getting good pitching, one good pitcher can shut those guys down. And if Shane Bieber shuts those guys down in game one, the big four, the big five, whatever you want to call it, then the Indians are going to win that series if they win game one. And the Indians have some thunder, too, and they've played better in the later part of the
season. Are you picking Cleveland to go to the World Series?
I'm picking Cleveland to beat the Yankees.
Well, how about the White Sox?
White Sox and Padres,
also limped into the postseason. They lost nine of their last 10, didn't they, Brandon, or something like that? Eight of the last nine. Yeah. They limped into the postseason, too. And I don't think the White Sox – I love the White Sox lineup. They got five guys that could be stars anywhere, all right, just like the Yankees do. But I don't think the White Sox have the pitching that the other people have.
But,
so, yeah, I think the Indians could buy both those.
You're absolutely right. They don't have the pitching. Number two, most of their big hitters are pitchable. Are pitchable easily inside hard, but you got to make sure you got the hard throwers to get the ball in there.
So, to get back to my question that I asked 10 minutes ago, are the Yankees and Dodgers playing for the World Series?
No.
Freddie says no.
Brandon,
what do you say?
I'm saying watch out for the San Diego Padres, and I'm saying everybody always sleeps on these Rays. People forget about the Tampa Bay Rays.
They
are 40-20 this year. They're just good. So look out for those two teams.
They're always competitive. I'm not penciling the Dodgers in either. Okay, they got the best talent and they got the best record, but there's something about the postseason, especially in these three game series that y'all outlined, that make it compelling. And I would not pick the Dodgers and Yankees to be shoe-ins for the World Series.
And Kershaw does not pitch well in postseason.
Has not for his whole career.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. So I want to tell you about this other thing going on in baseball. After I first tell you about, do I need to tell you? Of course I do, because some of you are like me. You're stubborn, and you haven't done it yet. If you're like me and you're over 45 and you can't see your phone without your reading glasses, so many people 45 plus have been getting multifocal lens implants from Dr. Yaldo that enable you to see the tiniest of print and also see perfectly at a distance. It is a life-changing and a lifetime-lasting procedure. You don't have to go back in and get it redone. Eli Zarrett has done it. He swears by it. I have not gotten up off my fat butt and done it yet, but I really should. And for you people out there like Brandon who are under 45, still opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo is a great idea. The most precise in Metro Detroit, because it enables you guys to once and for all throw away your annoying contact lenses and glasses. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. So get a free evaluation. Not going to cost you anything. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. You call 1-800-398-EYES or just go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. If you tell them No Filter Sports Podcast sent you, you'll get $1,500 off the regular price. And Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, a family business started half a century ago by Hoot McInerney, the legendary Detroit auto giant and philanthropist. In July alone this year, Star got nearly 100 five-star reviews. One woman wrote, "My entire experience was more than wonderful." Another said, "The buying process during this pandemic was made so easy at Star and much quicker than I anticipated." Or this one, "Just bought a Nautilus online. It was super easy. It was delivered to my home and they sanitized it right in my driveway." Now, everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. And in buying a Lincoln at Hoot McInerney Star, you're going to find both the buying and service elements to be hassle-free and as effortless as possible. So drive the Star of the American auto luxury industry. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or just buy online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So here's the only other thing I wanted to mention in baseball. We just had Matt Shepard on a little while ago. Interesting piece in the New York Daily News last weekend over all these MLB broadcasts that we all watch. Regional sports networks like Fox Sports Detroit lost so much money this year because they only aired 60 games. So moving forward, and who knows what's going to happen, as Denny always says, whether or not we're going to deal with a continuing pandemic for the 2021 season, the empty seats, suits, and bean counters who run broadcasting are going to be looking for ways to drastically cut costs. So the way baseball has been broadcast to us during COVID-19 might now become the new norm. Play-by-play guys and analysts would continue broadcasting from remote locations using only the hometown TV feed of baseball games. They're not going to send any crews or announcers on the road anymore. Savings could amount to millions. Does it matter, guys? What do you think?
Well, I just had a conversation via text with Dan Dickerson, the play-by-play voice of the Tigers on radio, and I said, I don't know how you do it. And I'd say the same thing to Matt. How you call these games when you're not in the stadium, to me, would be the biggest challenge in broadcasting. And I'm fearing that you may be right. But to me, if you're going to call a game, you need to be in the stadium. I understand in this pandemic year why it didn't happen. But I think to call a game off a monitor, to me, is it's just almost unthinkable. And here we did it for the whole season, and by and large it worked. I mean, if you didn't know, in most cases, if you weren't told or didn't know, you would not notice that those broadcasters not in the stadium. And I am fearful, Bob, that what you outlined is, yeah, to save costs, they're just going to say, the heck with it. This worked. We have the studios built. We have the technology. And I hope it doesn't happen. Because you need to be at the game to call it.
It gives the owners a big one-upsmanship when they start talking about guys getting a new long-term contracts. If the money's not there, the long-term contracts are going to be reduced, and so is the amount of money. I know they were talking the other day about who's going to be the first billion-dollar player. Well, it's not happening soon, not if this condition is not remedied. So we'll just have to sit back and watch and see what happens. I still think, I think most of us agree, that next year we're still going to be in a mask of some kind. We're still going to have some tremendous safety concerns. I hope the medication that they're coming up with works. I hope it works immediately. But, you know, it takes time for these things to evolve and to mature so everybody can get it. So we'll see what happens. But this is going to be a long, drawn-out process.
About the announcing, I said on last Thursday, supposed to be Thursday show, Friday, as it worked out with Larry Sorensen, that watching the Stanley Cup Finals, as I do, with the great Mike Doc Emmerich of Marysville, Michigan. Mike's in his home in Marysville. His play-by-play is like a half second behind. You know, it's just, it's a really weird thing. So, Fred, I'm with you. I don't see how they're going to do this. I will add that if you have that kind of nomadic lifestyle, peripatetic lifestyle, and you're going to all of these places, that travel gets real old after a while. So maybe some of the guys say, you know what, I'd rather stay home. Denny, when you played, you went to the same cities. You stayed in the same hotels. You ate in the same restaurants, went to the same bars. That got to be a drag, didn't it?
No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, okay. I'm just asking.
I don't think so. You know, most cities we went into for 3 or 4 days at a time. After one day, you get relatively comfortable. You know, the food is the food. I mean, most of the food was pretty good. The problem was in the early days that I played, our meal money was $20 a day. Imagine $20 a day in Chicago or New York or L.A. I mean, it was impossible. So you'd go right to the traveling secretary, Charlie Creedon, and say, Charlie, I need another 100 to get through the next 3 days. Oh, okay. And then, of course, what you do forget about is that 100's coming out of your first check that you're getting back from the Tigers.
So game five of the Stanley Cup Finals is or was Monday night as you listen to this.
Yep.
With Tampa leading Dallas 3-2. If you're not much of a hockey fan, Denny and Eli, if you say it's not hockey season, you haven't been watching either. You've missed some great games, capped by Saturday's win and double overtime by the Stars. Now, the NBA Finals start Wednesday night, Miami against the Lakers. Boys, take it away.
Well, I agree with you on the hockey game the other night. I happened to watch that. It went into double overtime. And I think hockey going into overtime, even though obviously there aren't many goals scored because the first one wins it, I think it's riveting to watch a Stanley Cup, you know, a do or die game, because if the Stars had lost, they'd be done. They got the goal.
And they had scoring in the previous game.
And that's riveting. And by the way, I don't know if you guys know this, and I don't want to bore you with all the details, but in 1999, there was a law student here in Lansing.
I already went over this in the last show, to which you did not listen. And if you want to be a part of this goddamn sports show, you better hear every show, whether you're on it or not.
So you're aware that John Cooper was
aware. I did a big thing on him on the last show.
I didn't hear that. So when this guy was coaxed into coaching Lansing Catholic Central High School, and that's how he got. And now
after 11 years as an attorney,
now he's got another team in the Stanley Cup Finals. I apologize, Bob. I didn't hear that segment.
Freddie, that's okay. I've known you too long to be mad at you. Just listen to every show from now on, all right?
I will. I won't ever miss
one. I hate like hell to think that you weren't mad at him.
So, the NBA?
Yes, sir. The NBA, I give you the prediction. 4-0. This one's over with already.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. This is 4-0.
The bigger picture thing for me is we talk about not having fans at games. To me, the game that is affected most by that is basketball.
Yeah.
There's something about watching these games with no fans that just bugs me. Baseball, I can get past, I'd rather there be fans. Football, I'd rather there be fans. But there's something about fans being a part of these NBA dunk fests and going crazy. Plus, they sit, unlike the other sports, right on the floor. And it just seems anticlimactic to me to watch these games without fans. I think that's the sport that's been most affected by the lack of fans.
Basketball. That's a great point. You know, and I was on the Knicks broadcast here in New York for a number of years. And I will tell you, during that whole, you know, Ewing Chicago series, it was utterly amazing. I want to thank you guys for listening down in Toledo. Say goodbye to our radio listeners. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. But the electricity in look at the Pistons games this year. The electricity in these arenas is unbelievable. And yes, you missed that.
Well, yes, if they're winning. I mean, there's no electricity in there if you're only going to win 12, 14 games a year.
That's what I mean. It's the NBA Finals. I mean, it's wild. Really?
Oh, no, I understand that. I understand it's the way it should be, as a matter of fact. But when you don't have a good team and you're fielding a bad team, there's not a whole lot to cheer for. I don't care if you're sitting at home on your couch broadcasting or in the facility. I mean, it's tough to generate excitement.
Yeah. Hey, Danny, just asking, because I always care about you. You know that, no matter how much we fight. You need a cup of coffee right now, or got to go to the bathroom? Glass of water?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, you want to sit here through this then? Because Fred and I and Brandon need to discuss this. Okay.
Discuss what?
Steve Yzerman acquired Mark Stahl from the New York Rangers on Saturday. That's a big name.
You know what I'm really impressed with the Red Wings? They've got 20 draft choices that they've drafted.
Wow, you know that. Years. They sure do.
I'm really impressed with that. I did not know our guy was doing such a big-time job as president of this ball club. I'm really impressed.
Yeah. Here's what's going on with that. They're not going to re-sign Jonathan Erickson or Trevor Daley, and Bowie's likely not going to come back either. So Stahl plugs a hole on the Wings' blue line. Now, he's 33. He had a severe concussion administered in a game by one of his brothers, Eric Stahl, in 2011. Total accident. He had an eye injury in 2013. So basically, he's just an average defenseman now. He's not what he was. But he's still decent. He's got 1 year left on a deal with a $5.7 million cap hit. Now, the Wings are still about $25 million under the NHL salary cap. Rangers are over it. That's why they made the trade, and they threw in a second-round pick for future considerations from Detroit. You know what that's going to be? A low-round pick. So the Rangers now also have to buy out one of the greatest goalies who ever lived, Henrik Lundqvist. And as Denny said, the Wings own 20 picks over the next two drafts. Freddie, Brandon, I think this is a great trade for Stevie Y, and I think Stahl also is going to be a very good influence in the room with the young Red Wings defenseman.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's kind of a coup that he got him. And there's another guy out there who's a free agent from here, from Livonia, I covered him at Michigan State. Torrey Krug, who's a free agent with the Boston
Bruins.
Wouldn't
that be great?
Brandon, help me out on this. Is this my local bias, or is Torrey Krug become a star in this league? I think Torrey Krug would be a great addition to the Red Wings.
He's still in his late 20s. He's coming off of another 50-point season, which you love to see when you have a defenseman. He's a plus player career-wise. So if he's a local kid, he might give us that discount. I would love to see him in a Red Wings uniform.
Yeah, I would too. I think he'd be a great addition. He's good on the power play. He's a great character guy. He's just
undersized. He's undersized.
That's been his knock, and that's been the chip on his shoulder his whole career from when he played in juniors. Yeah. Is that he was told he wasn't big enough to play big time college hockey. He was told he wasn't big enough to play in the NHL. He's not only playing in the NHL, and he's a star. And if Yzerman could add Torrey Krug to the mix, you'd have something. And Denny, I'm proud of Denny for knowing all that about the Red Wings. I didn't even realize that. So good for you, Denny, and good for Steve Yzerman.
It'd be nice to see all four teams challenge somebody. But if we just can get one team squeezed out, just one that becomes competitive for a complete season, wouldn't that be nice?
As Brian Wilson once wrote and the boys once sang, wouldn't it be nice? Yes,
wouldn't it would be nice.
Right. So here's one for Brandon. I wish Eli were here with us today. We love you, Freddie. I'm not saying I wish you weren't here.
I get it because
Eli and Brandon are boxing experts. I don't follow it. I don't care. I don't know anything about it. If you guys do, feel free to chime in with Brandon. Mixed martial arts fighter Conor McGregor says his next opponent is going to be boxing legend Manny Pacquiao. In a tweet over the weekend, McGregor said he's going to box Manny somewhere in the Middle East. He wants the boxing match with Pacquiao to open new Las Vegas stadium they got there, I guess. Serious talks, according to the guy who represents both fighters. Bout is not a done deal, and the weight class has not been determined, but they say it could take place in late December this year, early January. Brandon, what about that?
When you look at it, what happened with Conor McGregor here? He was in the UFC. He did great. Yep. He made some decent money, but where did he make the most money? He made it fighting Floyd Mayweather in an actual boxing match and not in the UFC. So what this move is he is going to basically take on Floyd's arch nemesis, Manny Pacquiao, for the same thing. It's for him, it's just to get a bunch of money. He's probably going to net $100 million for just a couple hours of work. It's going to be a draw. People will get the pay-per-view just like they did when he fought Mayweather. And to tell you the truth, he didn't disappoint. When he fought Mayweather, it was a fun watch. You were rooting for Conor McGregor, even though a lot of people hate him, just because this wasn't his game. He was in the boxing ring and not the UFC octagon. So to me, it's just a money grab. He's going to lose, and everybody's going to be happy when it's said and done.
Freddie, you follow this stuff?
No, I don't. In fact,
I don't either. Denny, you follow this stuff?
Well, I follow it minimally so, but I like to watch the big names. You know, listen, the stuff that we used to watch, Frazier and Ali and guys like that. I mean, that's when the boxing was the most popular. And then they got into this other thing with no gloves, and you just hit the hell out of somebody's face for a minute and a half. That hasn't been something I've been attracted to at all.
No, in fact, I'm chuckling because I was out Saturday evening. It was my wife's birthday, and we went into a place with all 1,000 TVs, and I'm watching all the college football. Yeah.
Wait, no. It's your wife's birthday, and you take her out to a sports bar?
That's how we roll.
Listen, you'd have to meet his wife.
And Denny has.
Does she have any sisters for me then?
Yeah, she has sisters, but you're spoken for. Anyway, on the big screen on the left, and my wife doesn't follow sports at all, which adds to what you're just saying, Bob. Right. And she says, look at that boxing match. They're hitting each other. She says, I didn't know they could do that. And I said, that's not boxing. It's mixed martial arts, and I just can't get into it. And I used to love boxing.
Well,
and there's something about MMA. And Brandon, you got to tell me. And you don't have to sell me that it's popular because people love it.
Right.
But I haven't found the appeal of MMA.
I don't know. I think that people just like to see a good old fashioned brawl. And
that's what it is.
This is a little bit more. Well, obviously, it's a little more brutal than in the boxing ring, and so people
it's
like
so
that.
Violent.
But you got to see it. And just like you said, the popularity of it, the UFC TV ratings are surging, especially compared to all the other sports, more than the other sports. So,
yeah. So, Fred.
Well, I'll tell you this. They asked me to box. I'm a wuss. I'm not going near them.
You better believe it. Not even on the playgrounds when I was
not
a
even
boy.
On the playgrounds.
It's yeah. Right. So, Fred, let me ask you a question. What was your bill? What was your bill, the check on Saturday night?
It's funny you say that. Without a tip, it was $58.
Okay, so...
So with a tip, it was $72.
Contrary to what MLB thinks, chicks do not dig the long ball. Chicks dig sushi. So it was my longtime significant other's birthday a week ago Saturday. Okay. I took her to some pretentious Japanese restaurant in New York City. I wanted to order a pizza when I was done, and my bill for that dinner, $350. You are a lucky man, Fred.
You're coming.
I'm lucky. I was complaining about the $58 bill. All the way to the car. $58 for that?
How do you think I felt about that?
Yeah, right.
How about the mailbag?
Well, I want to get the mailbag that Brandon's bugging me to tell you about, and I should tell you about Feldman Automotive, which is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They got five locations in Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has nine locations total. Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. It's amazing, really. And they also have Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter. That's out in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. You buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, then relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. And they also guarantee that you're going to get credit approval. So you can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's nine locations. Massive inventory. Unmatched in Metro Detroit. And don't forget, you can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com. Effortless, hassle-free experience. So let Feldman earn your business and at the same time, support No Filter Sports Podcast. And Power Home Solar is America's fastest growing solar energy company. They're based in Metro Detroit. Every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels is also made right here in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you save money, you help save our environment, and never again suffer a costly or infuriating power outage. It's why Power Home Solar partners with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So with Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you're going to be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. Yeah, you can lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages for good. Power Home even has financing that starts at, ready for this, $99 a month. So call them at 1-800-POWER-90 and you'll save an additional $1,800. Join the movement to solar and let the sun shine in, as fellas, the beautiful Marilyn McCoo used to sing with the Fifth Dimension. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The other thing, too, is before we get to the mailbag, I've got this estate sale coming up this coming weekend.
We got to talk about that.
You're more than welcome to come out to the estate sale. And we're in Wixom. I'm going to give you the address. It's 53201. That's 53201 Maranatha, Maranatha, Maranatha in Wixom. So come on out, say hello. If nothing else, come out and have a Pepsi or a hot dog. Hey, we're going to have hot dogs, I'm told, too. So going to have a good time.
I hope that works out for you, Denny.
Thank you.
I hope no one brings toilet paper to your house 2 nights before the sale, actually.
That's all right. We could use it.
You can clean that up, too, then.
Yeah.
I got a couple more things for you. Freddie, you'll learn that this is the part of the show I hate the most, and it's almost on every show. This is our necrology. It's a part of most of our shows. We have to respect the guys that we older folks saw a lot of. And for you younger fans, you should know about these guys. Larry Wilson died last week. The ubiquitous number 8 of the St. Louis Cardinals of the NFL, ounce for ounce, one of the toughest defensive backs who ever lived. He was 82, listed at 6 feet, 190, but man, could he play. And you old-time Detroiters and NHL fans are going to remember Junior Langlois, Al Langlois, the NHL defenseman, three-time Stanley Cup winner with Montreal Canadiens, who also played for the Wings in my boyhood. I remember it well. From 1963 to 65, he was 85 years old. Fellas, are you ready for this now? Freddie, you play golf? Because Denny's a golf wacko. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not as good as Denny. I'm terrible, but I love to play it.
Well, Denny didn't play anymore, but he was really good.
He was good. I played with him. He was good.
So I want to thank my daughter Kelly's lifelong best friend, Stephanie Elias, for sending me this story from M Live over the weekend. Our dateline, Otsego, Michigan. There is a young lady there who started her high school golf career. Stephanie Scott was her name. And last Monday, in her first match, she was called into varsity action as part of only because they had a full team dual meet against rival Plainwell, Michigan. So this girl's a freshman. What does that mean? She's what, 14 years old, 15 years old? Her first hole she ever played, she hits a perfect 7-iron, 90 yards, for a hole in one at number 8 at Lake Doster Golf Club. First ace on the first swing of her first competitive round ever. Stephanie Scott started to learn the game when she was 7 years old from her dad and her grandfather. And fellas, I don't want to, you know, pour any water over this, but she might as well quit now because she can't get any better, can she?
Denny, have you ever had a hole-in-one?
I've had two, and as a matter of fact, I had two, and the two of them within 10 days of each other, down in Lakeland, Florida at Lone Palm. And
really?
The first one shocked the hell out of me. The second one, I almost had a heart attack.
So, I hear you're such a cheater that you marked down a zero on your scorecard.
I marked down a minus 3. So, yeah, it was
very good.
Good day. Yeah, we
two of them. Wow.
Used to play a lot.
You hit the ball a ton, too.
You know what, Denny? You were born too soon because had you been born later, you were such a good player, you would have done what a lot of these guys do. You would have played on the seniors tour starting at age 50.
That's what my mission was. When I got out of baseball, that's what I wanted to do, play on the seniors tour.
But it wasn't much back then, was it? It wasn't much back then. It wasn't much.
No, it wasn't. No, it didn't. The senior tour really didn't start until the late 70s.
Well, did you ever play golf with Ken Harrelson?
I played a lot of golf with Kenny Harrelson. Used to take my money in a New York. The only I could putt and Kenny couldn't. So we were always doing a lot of pushing, you know. But Kenny could really play at one time. And Kenny went and tried to get his card, I'll bet, 20 times to play on the PGA Tour. He never got his card.
That's why I brought him up, because I've played as I'm sure you have. Bob, do you golf or not?
I don't, no.
I've played with a lot of guys who are really good, and I've seen a lot of college players come out of here at Michigan State, and they hit the ball so far, and they hit the ball so hard, and they're so good. And I'm thinking, these guys that I play with are so good, and they can't even sniff the tour or getting a card.
And I'm going to name a name for you, because I did play golf for 5 or 6 years, because I was invited to all these events. I played with Bill Laimbeer 2 or 3 times.
He was
national
good.
Long drive stuff. Mm-hmm. You've never seen anything till you've seen Bill Laimbeer tee off with a driver. But you know what? Couldn't putt.
Right.
And his short game wasn't great. Otherwise, it's a tough, tough thing to do, as we all know.
I'll tell you the greatest thrill I ever had in the game of golf was the first time I got to play with Arnold Palmer and Gary Player on the same day in the same place at Lone Palm. They came in to do an exhibition to promote the senior tour. Excuse me. And, you get on the first tee and you're standing there with these two guys that are legend, iconic in every which way. I was afraid to say hello. I mean, that's the kind of importance I drew to these two guys. And
they look like great guys. So tell me they were.
Still play it. Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, there's a number 17 at Lone Palm that was back then. It was like 580. And the only guy to hit out of the four of us, the only guy that hit the green in 580 was Gary Player, the smallest guy on the golf course.
Here's another name for you, Denny, a guy I'm sure you must have pitched against because he was a star with the Yankees throughout the 1960s. I'm sure, Ralph Terry, I heard, was one hell
Ralph was a
golfer.
Real good golfer, too. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Hit the ball a long way. A lot of pitchers became pretty good golfers because we had a lot of time off.
Well, look at Smoltz.
Yes.
John, I was just going to say
on
that.
The tour. Yeah.
You know who else? Rick Roden.
That's right.
Roden's a great player.
Roden was actually the number one guy on that tour for quite some time.
Yeah,
I bet.
Mark Mulder, another guy, great on the tour.
Another guy.
Yeah, another guy.
And you know what? The guys found out they can make, 10,000-15,000 a week if they really play well. And so they started, the good players really started to take it seriously. And there you got these guys that you just mentioned. They were really good players.
God, this is so nice. Now we approach the part of the show that you fans love, but I don't like anymore because I'm always uptight because the guy with whom I work is really, really uptight. He's not here today. So, folks, sit back, relax as we get into your mailbag segment.
Let's see how quick we can do this.
now you're giving me crap about this.
I want to hear the mailbag. I want to hear the mailbag.
Because a little bit of it is about you, and you should have heard Thursday's show where they ripped you a new you-know-what hole.
For what I do.
You don't have to do much, Freddie.
You'll have to go back and listen to it, Freddie. So I want to remind you that you can tweet me at Bob Page Sports. Denny does not reply personally to his tweets. Fred Heumann says he's had enough with Twitter. He has a Twitter handle, but he doesn't reply to you. And after hearing Eli Zaret's public resignation from Twitter on our last podcast, friend of the show Robbie Silverman was watching college football on Saturday. He was moved to tweet me, "These college football games look like they have the same crowds as the typical non-playoff bowl games, but no tweeting Eli anymore? He's against engaging with the common folk." Yet another friend. I have no comment about that. Yet another friend of the show, Paul Caron, tweeted Eli anyway. "Bob is right, Eli. Just because you can run a museum does not make you a great NFL owner. Sheila Ford Hamp needs to do what her father, mother didn't do. Find a great GM and president and get out of the way." We're only two games into her leadership. Paul writes, now three, of course. And to be fair to Eli, I believe it was Mr. McClain who brought up Sheila's impressive museum experience.
Yes, I did.
So D-Champ Green follows up on that, Denny. He says, "I thought Eli was the most aggravated on the last show I've ever seen him. I mean, I understand everybody's side, but I would have laughed out loud, too, when Denny talked about Sheila Ford Hamp having run the Henry Ford Museum. Hilarious."
Well, had you not cut me off so many times, I'd have got the entire story.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Next time we do the show, I will give the whole story out because you did not allow me to tell you what that was all about. It was a lot more than being a part of the museum.
But now with our new rotating cast, you're not doing the show Thursday. You're busy with your home sale, aren't you?
Thursday off. Yeah.
Looks that way. You can also, as you regular listeners know, get in touch with us by emailing asknofilter@gmail.com. Now, I don't want to read this one, and I will. I'm hesitant to read this one because my peeps tell me, and I did listen to most of the show, that even Fred Heumann joined Eli in ripping your mailbag segment. I couldn't believe it. But here we go. Scott writes in, "Just wanted to note that the episode with Fred Heumann filling in for Bob was a nice change up. There was no antagonism and political BS." He writes the full word. "I like Bob and I agree with most of his points, but the show would be a lot better if he could learn to tone it down. More importantly, if he could stop interrupting others until they complete their point, things would be better. The chemistry among you three guys is actually fairly good with just enough friction and counterpoint. But for some reason, Bob's ego tends to tilt things too far. I'd really like to see more of Fred Heumann filling in for Bob. Maybe a few more trials of this format would be worth a try. You ask for it, buddy. You got it."
That's why I love the mailbag.
That's the reason. We only heard the last letter, though, on the last show. Yeah, people. And by the way, Freddie, on the last show, you had a number of compliments in the mailbag as well. Fans writing in and saying how much they enjoyed your work. And, of course, everybody in Michigan knows you because you work both in Detroit and in Lansing. Folks, you can call us at 760-89-BALLS. You can text us at that number, too. And this is from the ever-popular unnamed texter. 6.5 minutes into the Friday podcast, and I'm rolling here. Hearing you guys rip into each other over the Lions ownership is hilarious. Two, it's the full word, BS's. Eli said the word twice, and Bob with the quote, "Now Brandon has to edit that." Funny stuff. Keep busting each other's balls. It's hilarious. Now, listen to this. He then adds, "Oh, and give Brandon his due." Huh? We didn't? So we now have five guys with Freddie and Larry Sorensen who can rotate in and out of this program. I'd like to add Stanley Edwards personally, too. I think he'd be great. This format is what Eli has wanted, and he's running the show. He's driving the bus. But there's only one of us here who is absolutely indispensable. Without producer-engineer Brandon McAfee last Thursday, who was tending to his sixth wife, we had no show, and we had to move it to Friday. You satisfied now?
No, I'm going to need a couple $100 from you, Bob, if you want this posted.
Now, we have an interesting point from an old friend of Denny's, Ty Emelander, who writes, "We have all fallen for the hype of Casey Mize except one person. Does anybody realize Rick Porcello had 48 major league wins at Mr. Mize's age? I think Mize has potential, but Denny McClain was the only one not fooled by this young pitcher. My view is the jury's still out. I think it's probably Fred's view, too, but Denny does not like him."
Well, Fred played, at a different time when they scored runs. He had more than five runs scored for him almost every start he had near Detroit.
You're talking about Porcello now,
Porcello,
right?
This kid hasn't been getting those kinds of runs, and it wouldn't have made any difference with the number of runs he was giving up. So we'll see what happens. A period of time has to take place. We'll judge him. We'll see him come back. He's going to go to winter ball, I assume, and maybe he'll learn something down there. He's stuck in the mud.
I'm not down on Casey Mize at all. I just get tired of the hype. I get tired of him getting praised. I get tired of hearing how this guy's a can't miss. I get tired of hearing how good he is. He didn't win a game. He can't get into the fourth inning. So I hope I eat my words. I really want him to succeed. I'm not down on him. I just get tired of the hype.
Okay, now, especially for those of you out there who sleep in maize and blue pajamas, like Brandon McAfee and Eli Zarrett, we have two Michigan people joining us on the next show. Thursday, Eli's going to be back, and we're going to have the great Michigan running back, Butch Woolfolk, who played so many years in the NFL as well. So we'll talk. We got a lot of stuff to talk about with Buck. Danny, thanks for being here. You like the mailbag when I get those questions about you. And Freddie, thanks so much for joining us. Brandon, thanks as always. And we'll see you next time on another edition.
Bob, I hate the mailbag.
Okay, fine. Well, then I'm going to have to get one of these days. We'll do a show then with just me and Freddie and Larry Sorensen. And
we'll have do fun. A show with just you.
That'd be fun. I could do that.
I bet it would.
I have enjoyed, to Brandon. I enjoyed the mailbag. I enjoyed the mailbag today.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate that. Good.
All right, guys.
Bye, Danny. Have fun. Have a great sale, Danny. Bye.
Thank you very much.
See you next week.
If you were really a friend, Bob, you'd be here for the show. Goodbye.
I was arrested by Clinton Township Police Department. And when I was laying in the bed that night, I remembered a friend had told me about this program, Hope Not Handcuffs. Immediately after being released, I walked to the front counter and I said, I need help, can you please call someone? And the police officers there, they called Hope Not Handcuffs for me. An angel came out and it saved my life.
The first step doesn't need to be the hardest. Let us guide you to recovery. Go to HopeNotHandcuffs.com to learn more.